Radio 3 with Studio Production Today by Mark Swartzentruber.
Performers and music lovers from across the globe come together for an inspirational weekend of music at WOMAD. Exclusive coverage on BBC Radio 3 of the UK's biggest festival of world music. WOMAD 2011. 8 hours of live world music performances from Wiltshire. On BBC Radio 3 this weekend.
This is BBC Radio 3. It's just gone 12 o'clock and time now for Private Passions with Michael Barclay. And today we have another chance to hear an edition of the programme first broadcast in 2005. Michael's guest was the great British travel writer and war hero Sir Patrick Lee Fermor, who died last month, aged 96.
Patrick Lee Fermor has had, by any standards, a colourful life. Born in 1915 and just recently knighted, in between, his life has had one consistent, important aspect, which has coloured almost everything else, and that's Greece, isn't it, Paddy?
Yes, it is.
How did you come to go there in the first place?
I had rather stormy school days, and then I was cramming for the army to become a professional soldier, and I was 17. But I'd had a troublesome school days, and I'd got the sack and that sort of thing. And I suddenly decided, with remarkable foresight, it occurs to me now, that if I went into the army, I'd probably get into trouble in peacetime soldiering. So then I think it was a book of Robert Byron's, The Station, about Mount Athos, that I suddenly thought I'd strike out and go to Greece. I had very little money, and so I bought a big pair of boots and a rucksack. And I had £1 a week, and I decided I'd trudge all the way to Constantinople and get to know Greece and wander all over it, and I was in no particular hurry. And so that's how it all began, really.
And then, of course, that knowledge of Greece came in very useful during the war, didn't it?
Oh, yes, it did.
And you famously were part of the resistance there, and indeed captured a German general, didn't you?
Well, yes, I was in command of a small, there were 11 of us, two English chaps, me and Billy Moss, and others, all old Cretan friends. I'd been there nearly 2 years already, and I knew them all frightfully well. And so we arranged this operation, and thank heavens it succeeded. And we were quite a long time up in the mountains with him.
There was quite a bit of nerve involved in actually kidnapping a German general with a small group of people.
Well, we had to dress up as German soldiers, which would have landed us in terrible trouble.
You would have been shot at once if you'd...
I'm afraid so, yes.
So it was quite a risk.
Yes.
And, of course, it was made into a famous film too, wasn't it, with Dirk Bogarde?
Yes, it did.
Yes.
You'll meet by Mirage.
Yes. But then Greece continued to exert a huge influence on you, and your travel books, all about the Mani, where you particularly specialised in, became very famous. Has it been a wonderful thing to be able to combine, in a way, your life's work with your life's love?
Yes, marvellous. Because before the war, for about a year, I wandered about in Greece on foot and learned to speak Greek very fluently, very incorrectly. And I had a heavenly time there. And then after several months in Greece, I wandered back to one of the countries I'd been to on my way there, which was Romania.
Well, we're going to hear some Greek music later, or at least music derived from Greek folk songs. But first of all, you're starting, actually, curiously, in Spain.
Well, suddenly, a number of years ago, my wife and I developed a great passion for Spain and we went and stayed with friends in Andalusia and got involved, like everybody else, in southern Spanish life and came most attached to it.
It's interesting that this music, and indeed quite a lot of the best music about Spain, is written by somebody who isn't actually Spanish.
Yes, isn't it extraordinary? Debussy and Ravel were the two sort of breakthroughs when I was about 14, 15, listening to music. And we made one feel very grown up to listen to them at all.
It's a wonderful mixture, isn't it? Both of very delicate, sensuous music, but also kind of quite straightforward dance at times. You almost feel a country dance beginning.
Yes, you can. At the same time, the whole passages seem to be rather threatening and sinister, rather like something rumbling away a couple of miles away over a series of hills, and then it seems to be flattened out, and then all of a sudden it becomes sinister again. And then rather innocent and rather childish comes jingling in, and the whole thing straightens out in the end in a kind of calm question mark. Very curious, right at the end.
Gigue from Images by Debussy. We heard the orchestra of the Suisse Romande, conducted by Ernest Ansemé. When you did that extraordinary walk when you were about 17,
yes,
having decided that what your housemaster called your sophisticated recklessness, yes, should be put on the shelf for a while, it must have been amazing, Europe at that time. It was on the cusp of changing completely, quite apart from, yes, Hitler and the Germans. Did you get a feeling of going through very different cultures as you made your way across?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I arrived at midnight in the Hook of Holland, pitch dark and then snowing, and I didn't realise the Hook of Holland was a few miles off Rotterdam, so I took the train there, quite empty, and got out just as dawn was breaking over Rotterdam. Pubs were opening in the harbour, and I went in, and the man said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "Well, I'm off on a long walk." "And where are you going to?" And I said, "Constantinople." And he was absolutely amazed, and poured out two very stiff bowls, which were clink glasses, and I set off, and it was still snowing. And within an hour, I was walking along a dyke road across Holland, and so a whole new life had begun.
Of course, the music you had left behind, in a sense, and that was the rage at the time, because you enjoyed dancing when you were young, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I did.
And I think this is one of the songs that you most happily remember from that time. Of course, it has wonderful artistry from the singer too, doesn't it?
Fred Astaire, wasn't it? Yeah. Well, I first saw on the stage in Lady Be Good when I was still at school, I remember.
And there's something, even in this actually, there's something vaguely sinister, isn't there? You know, the accompaniment goes...
Very much so. Dee, 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 dee,
dee, dee, dee. So there's a sort of slight undercurrent of worry to it.
Oh, rather. And before they ask us to pay the bill and while we still have a chance, let's face the music and dance. It's very, very dramatic, isn't it?
There may be trouble ahead, but while there's moonlight and music and love and romance, let's face the music and dance. Before the fiddlers have played, before they ask us to pay the bill, and while we still have the chance, let's face the music and dance. Soon we'll be without the moon, humming a different tune, and then there may be teardrops to shed. So while there's moonlight and music and love and romance, let's face the music and dance, dance. Let's face the music and dance.
That's the kind of tune that one imagines somehow that the minute you've written it, Irving Berlin must have known that he'd written something that was timeless. It
says, the words are so wonderful too, not only the music. The whole thing hangs together beautifully, doesn't it?
Fred Astaire with Johnny Green and his orchestra, Let's Face the Music and Dance by Irving Berlin. Another composer who manages to transport words in an extraordinary way next, but could hardly be more different, and that is Mozart. And I think this particular aria is rather important to you, Paddy.
Yes. Well, my favourite character in Wild Wicked Don is, of course, Zerlina. It's a question of choosing between two songs, either La Ci Darò La Mano. The other one I almost prefer is when Mazzetto, just being beaten up and is in a terrible state, it seems to be the essence of some kind, loving care. If you want to cure your ill, just put your hand here on my heart. And it seems to be the most romantic and understanding and magical and enchanting song.
Fedrai Carino from Act 2, Scene 1 of Mozart's Don Giovanni. We heard Mirella Freni as Zerlina with the New Philharmonia Orchestra, conducted by Otto Klemperer. What do you think it is, Paddy Lee Farmer, about Mozart that makes him such a sublime composer?
Well, it's a very extraordinary mixture of directness and simplicity and tremendous civilization at the same time. It's quite extraordinary, isn't it, how the two can be woven together so harmoniously, and how Zerlina comes across as such a simple, loving person in such a complicated story. She stands out a mile, doesn't she?
She's your kind of girl.
Anybody's kind of girl, actually.
Well, we're going to now go to a rather more simple kind of music, although it has its own sort of sophistication. And we prepared a bit of a surprise for you here, Paddy, because just as you, when you were 17, were traipsing round Europe, when I was only a year or two older, I suppose, perhaps a few more, I too was going round Greece and Crete and the Peloponnese, and paid a visit to you. And in fact, you may not remember this, but you actually sat down and sang me a whole lot of Greek folk tunes, which I then put into a little piece for viola. And we're fortunate enough to have a viola player here with us, Penny Thompson, who's going to play part of the piece. And so here with a bit of variations on Greek folk songs is Penelope Thompson. Well, that was one little excerpt from these variations on Greek folk songs. And I picked up quite a few of them when I was travelling around. But this one, I remember you singing to me, and I think you will probably recall this.
Thank you.
stone, oh my lord, greatly strata to lonesome.
You recognise that one fairly quickly.
Very well.
I obviously wrote it down right. But can you remember what that was then?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a thing called Potetakame Sesteria. It means, when will the clouds break? When will the fine weather begin? And it's really an allegory of the Cretans rising against the Turks and leading a revolution and saying, when shall the time go so I take my gun and get up in the mountains and then come down again and shoot as many Turks as I possibly can. And I know it will spread tears all over the mountains and the valleys, but still, that's the only way we can get freedom.
So it's quite an anthem, really.
Though, it's become almost Cretan irregular warfare national anthem.
Well,
very good analogy.
Thanks to Penny Thompson for helping us with some of those variations on Greek folk songs.
Yes, you got it very well.
It has that kind of lilt to it, doesn't it?
Oh, yes.
And so the instruments that would normally be used would be what exactly?
It's called the lira. It's a three-stringed rebec, which is held in the air.
Yeah. Held out in front of you. Yes.
Held out in front of you and played with a curved bow.
Yeah. Well, Patrick Lee Fermor, we're now going to hear some marvellous singing of a sacred kind as opposed to a secular. And I wonder how you came to hear this music, which I certainly remember from my days as a chorister at Westminster Cathedral Choir School.
Well, I heard it very late in the day. I used to go and stay in French monasteries. And then, of course, I came to adore Gregorian plain song. And this is really the first religious music that I heard as a grown-up that wasn't plain song. And it seemed to me almost heretical at first. It seems almost sinful to listen to something as un-Gregorian as that.
And, it's almost metaphysical, isn't it, in its
yes,
power?
Yes, it is, yes. I was rather priggish about this, because I'd just been reading Huysmans là-bas, talking about his experiences in monasteries and how he despised the awful trough by the end of the 18th century that French ecclesiastical music had fallen into. He's very sneering about it. Wonderful pages of rage.
Thank you.
just as we were saying with the Mozart, that you become attracted to the singer who is expressing those lines with Zerlina, it seemed to me there, Paddy Liefermer, that with Victoria, he conjures up a feeling of a wonderful piece of architecture, a cathedral or a monastery. The music's very cool, isn't it? And yet yes, very powerful.
It's absolutely true. Flying buttresses and archangels, indeed.
The ninth responsory from Victoria's Tenebrae Responsories for Maundy Thursday, sung there by Westminster Cathedral Choir, conducted by David Hill. So when you were going around monasteries, were you taken by the architecture as well as the landscape around them? Were you interested in that side of it?
Oh, very much. Mm. Yes, I've always loved it. Mm. And I'm a great haunter of cathedrals and churches.
A lot of the music that we've heard so far, and which we're going to hear, has come as part of your walking experience. In fact, when I was with you, we went for a long walk. I remember you were like a mountain goat, particularly coming down those yes, sharp, shaly yes. mountains. But the next music, I think, is closer to the Danube.
Oh, yes, Le Trout. Somebody told me afterwards that Schubert had been wandering about on foot very close to where I'd been wandering along the Danube, east of Salzburg in the mountains there, where a tributary comes down to the Danube. That's really where the inspiration came from. And I was absolutely haunted by this afterwards, and I was constantly inventing words to go with the second movement.
Thank you.
The fourth movement of Schubert's Trout Quintet. We heard the wonderful Andras Schiff playing with members of the Hagen Quartet and Alois Posch playing the double bass. Does that bring back happy memories of the countryside around the Danube, Paddy?
Very much, yes. It seems to have got mixed up with the current of the river dashing along between the mountains.
We've now got a rather tragic story, well, a romantic and a nostalgic one, coming up, Romeo and Juliet, Berlioz's version of Romeo and Juliet, Paddy. And I wonder which part of the score in particular you want to home in on.
That's one with all the guests going away and singing and fading away into the distance, which is absolutely a wonderful moment. Everything seems peaceful and happy. One doesn't realise all the troubles that lie ahead of them, and Romeo and Juliet, and indeed the two families. It's a wonderful, tranquilising, peaceful moment. Nothing but friendship and love and celebration and people seeing each other and enjoying each other's company, and then fading away at the end of a wonderful ball.
Of course, the point about that is that it's after the ball, isn't it?
Yes.
There's something quietly ominous there again, isn't there?
Oh, yes. Mm. Full of foreboding, I'm afraid. I was far too optimistically. Of course,
you were thinking of it as being calm and peaceful, whereas
yes,
in fact
I was.
It's calm.
I'd forgotten it.
No, calm and troubled.
Yeah. It's there's lots of trouble ahead, I'm afraid.
Well, we heard the young Capulets leaving the ball from Romeo and Juliet Part 2 by Berlioz, with the choir of the Bavarian Radio and the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by that great Berlioz conductor, Sir Colin Davis. The next piece, Paddy Lee Farmer, is something that we had a bit of trouble tracking down because you couldn't quite remember exactly what it was, but I think this is it, the Mozart Sinfonia Concertante. What is it about the music that makes it so special for you?
Well, it's got a wonderful kind of forest tapestry kind of feeling. One feels somehow they're all dressed up in wonderful clothes and galloping through the tree trunks. One really never tires of it.
It's fascinating to me how, being a great travel writer, you've described so much of the music in terms of landscape and outdoors and getting that feeling from it.
Yes, is that unusual?
I think people sort of are quite subjective about music, aren't they? They bend it to their own needs and their
yes,
own
of course
vision.
They do. Yes.
And so it's not surprising, in a sense, that you should associate it so much with landscape and
scenery.
Travel. Mm.
Yes.
That was the Presto Finale from Mozart's Sinfonia Concertante in E-flat, Kirkel 364. We heard Norbert Breinin playing the violin, Peter Shidloff the viola, and the London Mozart Players, conducted by Harry Bleck. Well, if there was a slight feeling of woods and horns in that piece, Paddy, they are much more specific in the next one, aren't they?
Yes, I think they are. Yes.
This is La Tromba by Couperin.
Yes. It suggests to me, again, landscape, forests, woods, and a hunt, hounds, stags in the distance, and it's got very much that sort of feeling to it.
Yes, that was wonderfully suggestive, wasn't it? The Couperin La Tromba from the Pièce en Concert, arranged there for cello and strings by Pierre Fournier, with the Lucerne Festival strings conducted by Rudolf Baumgartner. Now, we ended up with about one piece of music left, Paddy, that we were going to be able to fit in. And you originally said, let's represent the fierce savagery of Stravinsky and the Rite of Spring. But in the end, I think decided for a more pastoral, if you like, a romantic ending with the Britain's arrangement of the Sally Gardens. Why this particular piece then?
Well, I always adored it. I remember singing it and my mother on the piano playing. And I heard it again the other night, The Last of the Proms. It was so wonderful. Everybody was so moved. It's got a sort of tragedy to everyone, how very hardly one takes reverses in love when very young and how desperate it is.
Of course, Britten puts a wonderful harmony on that word foolish, doesn't he?
Wonderful.
I was young and foolish.
Yes.
And
yes.
It sort of says it all.
It's one of the best, most magical and seemingly simple poems of all Yeats, isn't it?
Jamie McDougall sang the Sally Gardens with Malcolm Martineau playing the piano. Well, Patrick Leigh-Fearne, we've come to the end of the programme. At the beginning, we talked about some of your exploits in Crete, and I've often wondered, and I can ask you now, what was the demeanour of the German general who you deprived of his liberty?
We got on very well, really. He was soliloquising, and he quoted the beginning of one of the odes of Horace. He happened to be the one that I knew, but speaking to himself. But I knew it by heart too, and so I took it up from him, and that changed everything. It's very curious. We felt we'd drunk at the same fountains years ago, long before the war. And it seemed as if the war had come to an end. And it changed everything from then on for the rest of our time together. And we were 3 weeks in the mountains.
Well, thank you for sharing some of the produce of that fountain with us today. Paddy Leigh-Fearne, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Sir Patrick Leigh-Fearne, who died last month at the age of 96, he was talking to Michael Barclay in an edition of Private Passions, which was first broadcast in 2005. Well, next week, Michael's guest will be the food writer and former chef Simon Hopkinson. Well, a very good afternoon to you from me, Ian Skelly, here to guide you through the programmes on Radio 3 this afternoon. We're off to the Proms at 2, a chance to hear the prom given by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales last Thursday, conducted by Thierry Fischer. Beethoven's first and seven symphonies, bookend music by Marc-André Dalbavy and Elliot Carter, his flute concerto. That's our Sunday concert at 2. And in just a moment, we're going to cross live to Charlton Park in Malmesbury for more coverage of the WOMAD Festival. But with the time now at 1 o'clock, a summary of the BBC News read by David Cornett.
At least 45 anti-government demonstrators in the Syrian city of Hama are reported to have been killed by security forces after troops and tanks began an assault on the town at dawn. Human rights activists say they fear the number could rise to over 100. An American embassy official in the capital, Damascus, has described it as full-on warfare by the Syrian government against its own people. Government forces had surrounded Hama for a month before moving in. Similar assaults are reported in other Syrian towns. It's thought the regime of President Assad may be making a coordinated attempt to repress protest before the month of Ramadan starts tomorrow. At least 12 policemen and a 10-year-old child have been killed in a suicide attack on a police patrol in the southern Afghan province of Helmand. It happened in the city of Lashkar Gah, where British troops handed over security to local forces earlier this month. A Nottinghamshire police officer has been charged with sexual offences against a child. Inspector Russell Dew, who's 44, will appear before Sheffield Magistrates Court tomorrow. Labour has accused the government of moving some health spending in England from poorer to richer areas as a result of changes to funding formulae. It says less well-off places such as Tower Hamlets in East London will lose out, while wealthier regions such as Hampshire will benefit. The government has dismissed the claims. A 59-year-old man whose light aircraft crashed into a house in Salford on Friday has died. A 19-year-old man who was also in the plane remains in a critical condition. At least 7 people have drowned when a pleasure boat sank on a river in Moscow. The boat was carrying 16 people, most of them American and Turkish. It collided with a barge. And the weather, it'll be dry and warm with some sun across central and eastern areas. Elsewhere, it'll be cloudier with some rain and hill fog deepening across northwest England and Scotland later. Temperatures will be around 20 in the south, 17 in northern England and 13 in northern Scotland. BBC News and Weather at 1:02.
David, many thanks. This is BBC Radio 3, and next this afternoon we're crossing live to Charlton Park in Wiltshire to rejoin the Radio 3 team at this year's WOMAD Festival of World Music. Here's Lucy Duran.
Well, it's a real privilege to be here at WOMAD on the Radio 3 stage in this lovely warm weather. But it's even more of a privilege to be able to present a project that's been in the making for most of this year. Some of you may know of the World Roots Academy that mentors a young and gifted UK musician who has roots in another culture. The protege this year was born in South London, but his parents are Sri Lankan, and he plays the veena, an ancient South Indian lute. It's the instrument of the Hindu deity Sarasvati, who is the deity of wisdom and culture. And that's very appropriate for WOMAD, isn't it? Well, later on, we're going to be hearing a unique collaboration between the 2,000-year-old veena and the thoroughly modern electric violin in the hands of the brilliant virtuoso Cuban musician Omar Puente. So South India meets Cuban music right here at Charlton Park. But first of all, we start in South India with the fabulous Carnatic classical musical tradition. So please welcome here on the Radio 3 stage, Hari Sivanesan.
Thank you.